No, I mean, if there was a mistake inside the stock exchange, I think the general public were quite totally mystified by what the system did, and probably still are to this day.
Did you ever feel, before Big Bang or before the Office of Fair Trading took the rule book up, that the jobbing system was under any kind of pressure?
It was, beginning to become apparent that because of progress in technology and life in general, that more that the outside world was beginning to encroach onto the stock exchange floor. And by that I mean is that I think clients were finding that although the stock exchange was meant to be the central marketplace, that in fact there were other ways of doing some business. And indeed, one always suspected that there was quite a lot of dealing going on between clients. There's no reason why it shouldn't have done, but it meant that they were dissatisfied with the sort of liquidity they maybe were getting on the floor. Also, I think the American firms were beginning to always had an interest in London, but they were beginning to focus on London a bit and were becoming competition in themselves. In the ADR market, you know, we had was quite a quite an effective way of doing that. And
could you explain what an ADR was?
The ADR was a way in which it stands for American Depository Receipt, and it's for various reasons American institutions couldn't or couldn't buy a London registered stock, and so some of the American banks created a depository receipt, which meant that they were able to deal in, say, if they'd got a quote on the big board in ADR form in America, they could deal in BP happily in ADRs without coming anywhere near the London market. ADRs don't require registration with the company, and that sometimes caused problems for the American who weren't used to our funny settlement system and the settlement system, and didn't like paying stamp duty either.
But this was taking business away from.
And this was exchange. This would have been effectively taking business away from the London market. So I think yes, there were. Although I think the single capacity system, if it hadn't been for the DTI, etc., would have gone on for a long time if it had been allowed to. I mean, there was no great wish to change. The change, if anything, was coming from the jobbers themselves. The wish to change, if you like, was coming from the jobbers themselves, who were casting eyes at business that was being done away from the London Stock Exchange in foreign securities, and felt that they were very encumbered, if you like, or at a disadvantage against foreign brokers or foreign houses, because the foreign houses could make markets and deal direct with clients. We couldn't. I mean, if we wanted to deal in South African gold shares, we had to do it through a broker all the time. And then in the late 70s, early 80s, the stock exchange did relent, and there was a sort of halfway house for firms that could set up something called IDs, which was international dealers. I don't know whether you've come across those in your discussions, whereby you set up a separate entity, still within the firm, but a separate entity which enabled you to deal in foreign securities directly with outside houses, mm. and not having to go through the broking system, mm. member firms, mm. And that was always something that was going to really be a temporary stopgap affair, and so I suppose the pressure was from the jobbers all the time was to be able to get to clients outside of the member firms in some way, and so I suppose they brought about the change a bit on their own because they, they said that they couldn't compete. Jobbers said they couldn't compete fairly and squarely with their American counterparts.
Switching the focus back to you, was there any progression in your career with Ackroyds, or did your work more or less stay the same? I imagine you became more senior in the firm.
Yeah. Can't remember exactly the date, but I told you that one of the changes in 1970 was that I was asked to be in charge of the brewery book. About 3 years later, I was asked to join the board of directors and was given the responsibility for looking after all our equity books. And by that means, I didn't mean I dealt in all the stocks, but I had responsibility for running, for looking after all the books themselves. Although individually they were run by somebody else. So at the same time, I stayed on the brewery book, but had, you know, as time progressed after that, less and less, I'd spent less and less time on it because other things took up one's time. So one left it to others, and that situation remained until Big Bang. Mm.
Yeah. Were you still going down to the floor of the stock exchange?
Oh gosh, yes.
Spending
a
full day dealing.
Yes.
Would it be possible to describe a sort of typical day for you in the early 80s, from the actual trip into work to going to the office to the floor of the house and so on?
We still had a fairly civilised day in the early 80s. It wasn't as civilised as the early 60s, but it was still fairly civilised. I think one used to do one's commute from wherever one commuted from, get into the office about 8. My job was then to, having overall control and responsibility for the equity positions for the firm, would be to go through the computer sheets of all the positions and all the bargains that we'd done the previous day, just to see that everyone was behaving themselves. in terms of what positions they were running, et cetera, et cetera. And the floor still opened in the early 9:30. I think it came back to 9 o'clock. That's very soon after that. So one would wander down. Oh, then we would, having done all that, we'd have our morning meeting with all the jobbers, as they were then. All the dealers, and we'd look at our money positions and look at any individual positions which were abnormally large, or discuss what we think the market was going to do, and so on and so forth, and sort of generally have a strategy. And you know, this is what we think is going to happen. This is where we want to get to, and whatever. Then we always used to drift down to the stock exchange, ready for the bell, and dealings would commence. And there you stayed until 3:30. Well, you didn't quite stay because in those days you had lunch. And 11:30. It was quite important. I seem to remember quite a lot of people. And that was a way of, anyway, whether it be over a pint of beer at 11:30 or lunch, that was a way of communication and getting to know people and establishing relationships and whatever. But the floor would shut at 3:30, and then we would go back to our office and continue dealing on the telephone until about 5:30. We all potted off home.
Was dealing on the telephone very different to dealing on the floor of the house?
Not really. It was probably more. It was probably more difficult for the brokers because instead of coming in onto the floor and walking around and checking the prices, they had to ring up. And they, you know, ringing up different firms and then not finding the phone was answered because they were busy. It was pretty frustrating for them. So it was more difficult to deal. Equally for us, it was a bit more difficult, I suppose, because you couldn't see the guy coming. There's nothing like looking into the whites of someone's eyes when they're trying to deal with you. There's no substitute for it. And that's something, of course, now we've lost forever. But and there was probably less business once the market floor had shut, unless there was something exceptional going on. There was probably less business, really. But it gave you a chance to, we used to sit and rule up our positions and add up, you know, exactly how many shares we bought and sold and then enter the position in the back so we knew exactly how we stood, whether we were a bull or a bear. And we'd take out our P&L manually, work out if we'd made a few pennies or lost a fortune. And then sort of, you know, unless there was some special meeting or whatever, you by 5:30, everyone would have been well on their way home.
Well, beginning to review things in general terms now, had the stock exchange as an institution changed a lot between when you joined or when you first started going to the floor, 1963, to the eve of Big Bang? Were there still the personalities? Were there still the same kind of goings-on? Or was it a different institution altogether?
Well, there were... One always... As you grow up, you never can quite see the same personalities in amongst your own age group as one remembers in one's youth. But I'm sure there were lots of personalities, and there still are. There's always been a peculiar stock exchange sense of humour. that probably prevails to this day, luckily. But it had become a much more informal place than in the sort of 60s and 70s, and not only in terms of dress, but in manner and approach and partly, I suspect, brought about by the rebuilding, from going from the old floor to the modern tower, which was, you know, probably much more efficient and whatever, but was also much more antiseptic and didn't have the atmosphere that the old floor had. They used to come around at 3:15 on the old floor, or after, no, 3:15 the rattle went, didn't it, and you were allowed to smoke for a quarter of an hour, and then they used to come and put tea leaves down all across the floor and then sweep it all up and take care of the mess. They didn't have to do that in the new floor, because you weren't allowed to smoke.
Who were the personalities from the early days?
God, I'm so bad on names and things. Well, if you remember. One of the most striking personalities I remember, who sadly has just died 2 or 3 years ago, was I mentioned him before, was Jack Durlacher. Sir Esmond Durlacher, I suppose, and Sir Nigel Mordaunt. Then there was Charles Pennell, there was They were important, but there were lots of other lots of other characters. I'm so bad on names and faces, I forget. You'll have to get it from other people. Who
What would you say it took to be a successful jobber?
Well, my father said to me when he said really all it takes to make a all you need to be a successful jobber is a pleasing personality and a bit of common sense. And I think he's right, actually. But you also have to have a good gut for the market. I think jobbers are born and not made, actually. You can tell virtually when a guy starts whether he's going to be any good at jobbing or whether he's not. Not often wrong. You have to get on with people. That was always very important. But you don't, I think one of the great misnomers about it is you don't have to be a mathematical genius. Well, you didn't as a jobber. You just had to have a good feel for whether markets were going up or down, really. These days, I think in some of the more complicated areas, you probably do have to be a mathematical genius. I'm certainly not.
If anyone had asked you at any point before 1986 what you thought about your decision to go into the stock exchange and going to a stock jobber, what would you have said?
Before 86?
Yes.
I would have said I'd been extremely lucky and very fortunate to have found a career that was had its ups and downs, naturally, but it was by and large a pleasure to go into the office every day. Doesn't mean to say that it isn't now, but it's different.
Well, I think we'll finish there. Thank you very much.
Okay.